Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I am your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And, wow, I am so happy to be here because it's Thursday. It means this is, I came up with a really good term a while ago for it, and I forgot what it was. It was like Weekend Eve Eve, something like that.
Yeah, I think it was Weekend Eve Eve.
Yeah, there we go. Weekend Eve Eve.
I knew it. She went to high school with me, I think.
Yeah, really nice. Great dancer.
She is a great dancer. You're right.
Yeah. Anyhow, so yes, it's just great to get to hang out with all of you. Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a bit of a random day and a bit of a random week because today's a public holiday in, well, some parts of Europe at least. Not everywhere. Not in Italy, I heard. So, which is interesting because I think it's a Catholic holiday. But I guess they stopped doing those. so, yeah. But yeah, I've been busy. I mean, getting ready to move and, you know, all of that. So, nice. But it was good. I got to sleep a little bit and fix some bugs in my app and watch some WWDC videos. None of that. So go for a walk.
Nice.
Yeah, and you can see it behind me. Oh, other side. Boxes and all of that.
Yeah. Looking at your boxes for as part of your whole move, you have managed to make moving look like a nicely staged event. Unlike my place where it looks like an earthquake happened.
Yeah, you haven't even, I mean, I mentioned that in the pre-show, like this is my 14th move. So I've learned a few things over time. And one of them is start early, start organized, label all the boxes. So I have I have a labeling system. It's basically four different places that boxes will go to. And they're color coded and there's a big letter on them, like on every box and everything. There's one of those massive post-it you can buy, and like the different colors, and they just put like a big letter, I don't know, K on it for kitchen or L for living room or whatever, and stick that on everything. And so people know where what has to go. Makes it easy.
Nice. Yep. I'm all about labeling the boxes and I do the color coding thing too.
Yeah, it's so helpful. For the move itself, but also for later when you're looking for something, because then you're like not looking, because you know it's always the last box, right? You're looking through the boxes, looking for something, it's always the last box you're looking. So this at least eliminates a chunk of them, because you know, okay, it must be in the whatever, it must be in the kitchen box because it's something for the kitchen and not in one of the other random ones.
Yep. Totally makes sense.
Yeah, but I mean, this is going to change soon too. Like, it looks nice right now, but give it 2 weeks.
Yeah, totally get it. So I will be doing my part to just keep what's in the camera shot looking good, and everything else will just be chaos. Already is chaos.
Yeah, that's how you do it.
That's how you do it.
Yeah, anyway.
Yep. Well, when I moved into this...
Yeah, and you could always just take a screenshot of your background and then just do that.
Right, which I still need to do. But yes, when I moved in to this space, what I did was I actually set up this area in CameraShot.
So
even though there was nothing else set up, put away, I had a spot where I could be doing shows.
Yeah, that's how you do it. I mean, that's how I did it. Like this room used to be very, very empty. And like people would always think, oh, it looks nice, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, it looks nice like in this frame. Everything else was like bare bones and white walls and nothing.
Well, as you can see behind me, I've got loads of space.
Oh, you got so much space.
I've got so I can really stretch and everything. Yeah. There's I mean, you can see why. This is exactly why I have a picture behind me. There is so much crap.
Yeah. I mean, you could like have a big like Indian like family wedding in there.
I mean, we could have any. Oh, yeah, you can have all kinds of weddings in the place behind me. It's just
Yeah, you could. Multiple weddings at the same time.
At the same time. It may well have happened. May well have happened at some point in its past life.
Yep. Ian, how are you? And I like your shirt.
Yes. Kit's on it, obviously. It's just a cheapy t-shirt, but it's fun. So I enjoy it. 80s fan that I am, yes. And I'm good this week. I'm good. Dying slowly from boredom. IT regulations. ITIL version 4. NIS 2 regulations. Oh, my life, they're boring.
I'm so they tired are of hearing you talk.
So dull. And I need to make the, and my game this week is to make this dull crap interesting. So I need games. I'm going to create some games. I'm going to have to create some scenario based stuff. I need anything to save me boring a room full of engineers with them when I get to present this one a little bit later on this year. Otherwise, it's just going to be horrible. I wouldn't want to sit through it. I wouldn't want to be in the audience without something to liven the thing up, because it is just deathly dull. It's really relevant to our industry, but it's deathly dull.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Some of the things that are critically relevant like that are painfully dull to have to learn or sit through.
MITL particularly is really... And everyone who writes stuff about this stuff swallow the dictionary.
Well, what I'm looking forward to is seeing the recording of your presentation where it does involve song and dance.
I've got to do something.
Training class brought to you by Steven Sondheim.
It's like the company name is already a good title for a musical. Beam the musical.
Beam the musical.
I know when I did the launch event at the start of the year, and we were looking at our slides and thinking, some of this is a bit boring. And my colleague who I was presenting with looked at me and goes, have you got your tap shoes with you? I can do a comedy routine between the two. Oh my god,
the song is coming to me.
Yeah, everything comes down to Veeam.
I'm gonna back up forever, saving your data on the cloud. Veeam, I'm gonna back it up forever.
No, Jeff, tell Josh, you love it,
and let it go.
No, we don't let it go. That's bad.
Yeah,
you have to tell Josh.
But I mean, in a musical, you have to have some drama. Like someone has to lose data, and like you have to.
There's always drama, yes, guaranteed. I've researched all sorts this week for bits. I'll come to some of the bits of research when I talk about my story. Actually, some interesting snippets I found that are actually interesting.
Nice,
very nice.
And Patrice, you have me thinking up more songs. So thank you.
I'm good for that.
Yeah. Tom, how are you?
I'm great. I just have this image in my mind of Maria singing in West Side Story instead of longing for a boyfriend, longing for the files that she's misplaced and looking for team backups. That image is definitely in my head. I'm doing great. Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome. Oh, what are we going to do about our data? What are we going to do about what's lost?
This is so good.
Okay. 22 minutes in, officially off the rails.
What rails?
We never had rails.
This is
rails
freeform.
Have been exited.
This is a freeform industry. This is definitely a freeform podcast.
Always has been.
If we don't listen to this because it's informative, then it's going to be silly.
Well, never said that we were smart, but we are entertaining. Completely. So, you know, there's that. You know, I guess as long as we're here, we should at least go through the pretense of...
Did we say hi to Tom?
Oh, we haven't said hi to our other member.
No, we said hi to Tom.
Yeah, we did.
Did we? Yeah, all right, okay.
And then I started singing to him.
Guys are too busy listening to Jeff's song.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry, Tom.
No, I'm sorry because you're having to listen to me sing.
No, that was awesome.
That was awesome.
All right. Patrice, you have the first story in.
Okay.
So we can now really pretend like we're actually doing a show.
For 5 seconds. Yes, we could pretend. Right. So there's two interesting like European Union, EU market stories today. One was about Zoom and a lot of other companies moving data to Europe, or the data and the data centers to kind of curb some of the criticism. But the story I brought today is more German-centric because the personalized advertisements that you get basically everywhere are in focus in Germany in the, what is that called? What is that?
Federal Cartel Office.
Yeah,
that exactly. Just happens to be the line in front of me from the article.
Okay,
right
good.
Now.
Yeah, I didn't even remember what the guy was from. Where the guy was from? So basically, he was basically talking about some stuff going on in Germany and like what they're looking at and so on. And he basically said, we should ask ourselves whether we want to have virtually transparent internet users. Only because we are supposed to buy certain products or services. And I think the point that he made was that it's not just that is a pretty big invasion of privacy. I think we all know that, but that also that is very anti-competitive because only a few companies on the planet, and I mean, we can all name them. That's Google, that's Meta or Facebook. There's probably one or two more that I'm not blanking. Microsoft probably through Bing, maybe Samsung, like a very small number of companies that have that like level of data and can't even get to that data, and through that have a pretty big advantage over other companies that are maybe like startups that are coming up because they can't get to that data, or they have mm-hmm. to pay, as we're seeing, ridiculous amounts of money to get to that. That they're saying maybe that is something we have to look into and have to block, so that they call it the programmatic non-search ad sector. It's a very German way of describing it. I'm pretty sure it was translated. Yeah, it's simply personalized ads or automated ads, like what we know, basically what the internet runs on right now. That's what they're looking at.
Oh, there's a nice comment in there where they talk about Facebook's super profiling, where it's taking the view that it's socially exploitative, but abuse of privacy, which is so true, where the feed of adverts changes purely because of what you've looked at, or if you're near your phone and you use Google, what it's listening to you talking about. I mean, that, and Amazon as well is another one probably that's guilty of the same kind of thing.
Although we're within,
again, but
they even find
whether you're in their closed market because you're still feeding them. Saying, you were talking about toilet roll. Would you like to buy some of this Andrex? You know, and on it goes.
Yeah,
and.
I mean, we've all had that. Like, I don't know, you do one Google search for some product and all of a sudden you get emails and you get, like, on every website, they get advertised like, hey, do you want to buy electric kettles? Because...
Yeah, I Googled like to buy some shoes once and then I saw shoe adverts for months after.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in my opinion, I'm not a big fan of that. I mean, I understand advertising being important because I think it's one of the few ways how you can make at least some money right now. Everything else is very, very difficult. I mean, like the streaming services maybe are an exception to that rule so far. But I mean, if you're a journalist, even for app developers, it's getting harder and harder to charge for things. So advertisement is one way of doing it. And people expect a lot of, I mean, and it's something I think about. People expect a lot of things for free. I mean, we all do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like we want to go to YouTube and consume content and mostly for free. I mean, if we don't pay for the premium thing, which I think a lot of people don't. It's ridiculous expensive.
I mean, the one thing I find with a lot of advertising particularly is I'll go to some websites where, again, it's a very small concern, and, and they'll have one of the bits of Java that says you can't come on my website because you've got a Java block, you've got a web block, so I run, run Microblogger. Yeah. And I'm torn
immediately
between... Yeah, exactly. Immediately close. I'm torn because in some ways I'd like to support this vendor as long as their adverts weren't intrusive and they weren't particularly annoying. I'd be happy for a few banner ads to be down the sides of the bits of screen, the white space down the sides of the screen. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
It's when you get things like, I mean, Facebook and I like movies and things. And so a Ranker is I think it's a US site. That's one that quite often links to top 10 things, and oh God, I'm a sucker for one of them. Clickbait for me is one of those, and I'll click on that and have a look. And there's so many people, because it's going through the browser via Facebook, none of my filtering works against that. So I see the page in all its glory, and there's so many floating ads around the page that you just go away, let me read the content. And then they'll put one fact on one page, you have to hit next. So you see another cycle of ads, you get your click rates up. Can we just, and what Jeff was talking about with recipes, how they have to have a small life story before you get to the thing that you were interested in. What do I put in this to make chicken chow mein? You know, and all of those things, it's, there has to be a better way, which means that I can give back to the creator of the content happily. But it'd be a manageable thing for me to use. I'm happy to, as I say, to have small banner, to have reasonable banner ads around the page. I just don't want to see everywhere. Yeah. And then some floating thing that goes back past me when I'm trying to read your dirt. No, please.
I mean, I have to say one thing about Meta and especially Instagram. I've bought some stuff from Instagram ads, and I think their ads are mostly very well done. Like, if they're in stories, you can just skip them. Like, you don't have to watch them. Like, you just tap the next, and it just skips to the next one. And there's usually, I mean, it's quite a bit. There's usually, what was it, two ads and then one story. That's usually how it works. But as I said, for the most part, they're quite well done there. And I'm okay with that. And as you said, like, the banner ads and... in between, or like the YouTube video where there's one ad at the beginning and one at the end, maybe one in the middle, if that's okay. Yeah. Like if it's longer video, I'm really fine with that.
I'm fine. And if you cycle enough of the ads, that I don't have to watch the same one four times in a row. I'm really happy with that. You show me a little. I can ignore that for 5 minutes. For not 5 minutes, but for those.
Yeah, for like 15, 20 seconds, it's fine. Yeah, exactly. It's also a different thing if it's like a 3 minute ad, then I'm.
Exactly. If it's not intrusive, but it is ending up benefiting the creator of the content, and I'm all for it. Otherwise, I worry some of the content, particularly from those kind of things we click through from Facebook, where there's a lot of ad content there, that it is the old soap opera thing where the content's created to get revenue from the ads rather than the content's created and being supported by the ads. Does that
Which
make
can
in the
be
same
fine
way soap
too.
Operas came up? Yeah. Soap operas were invented in that on that model.
Yeah.
They want to sell soap and they needed some way to get people to look at the adverts, so they put a story around the edges of it.
But I mean, that can be fine too. If the content is still enjoyable, I mean, the reason why it was created is like, I mean, it's not a, like, it depends on how it's done.
It's not going to, if the content is crap, nobody's going to watch it. So ads aren't going to work. And I think, you know, like Ian, you say those sites that, you know, the top 10 list where you get one sentence and six ads and one sentence and six ads. I think I'm sort of amazed that those sites still exist. Because you think at some point people get so sick of those that they don't get the ad impressions, you know, and get paid.
One way
to eliminate those things is people have to vote with their feet a little bit. But
they do.
Yeah. Or that, I mean, the advertiser simply say, well, that ad impression is not worth as much because it's just like you're just basically gaming the system and trying to get as many ad impressions as possible. But it doesn't really improve our bottom line, which, I mean, there is the other side to the ad market is to some extent the people advertising. And that, I mean, sure, there is the whatever, the scammy sites and the like whatever casinos and all of that, but there's also like normal businesses that want to advertise their offerings. Like,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure Jeff, you've probably done it in the past, like somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's totally okay.
I bought ads when I worked for Text Expander.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I bought ads for myself, like for stuff I've created. I've done that, and yeah, I mean, there is a legitimate side to that, and if like ads that work are fine. I think the problem comes in. I mean, it used to be mostly because of technology, like advertisers wouldn't know who's watching. They could still target. I mean, they would know, I don't know. I'm pretty sure they could distinguish like between the person who watches a Star Trek show versus the person who watches, I don't know, The Simpsons, for example. I'm pretty sure there's a difference. And that way they could target who they want to advertise to. But they didn't know about you. They didn't need to know about you. And that's the big thing that has changed.
Yeah. The thing I've noticed now with Facebook, when I've looked at the ads that turn up, that I just know, what the hell are you showing me this for? It's because I'm profiled in as much as I'm 50 and I'm male. Mm-hmm. And that's the only profiling data. It's not that I like sci-fi. It's not that I like cars or watches or any other thing that I'm interested in. It's because I'm 50 and I'm male. So I get to see all sorts of crap I really don't need. But I've been teaching it religiously. Every time I see one of these ones, they'll say, inappropriate ad. It's finally getting there now. So I only see ads about things that I like. So this is a distinct improvement in the world. But
that's also, I mean, that's the other side to that. I mean, you cannot expect targeted ads that you're interested in and not having it track you. That's simply not possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't have one without the other. Yeah. I accept one if I can at least control the flow of what I'm, as I said, back to what I said before, if I can control the flow of what I'm getting. So the information I'm shown is relevant. Mm-hmm. I'm happier than if I'm getting a stream of casinos and sex clubs, you know, things that I don't need, you know, the other side, the rubbish, you know, I don't want any of these things. And so if I can control that, then yeah, I'm very happy for it.
Yeah. And as I said, it's for me, what I've thought about a bunch of times, and what's really interesting is how much we rely on free things these days. Like, I mean, yeah, you pay for your internet access, but I mean, for most people, email is free. I mean, this podcast is free for everybody. We're ad paid, right? This podcast mostly exists because we have advertisers.
Yeah.
Twitter is mostly free. Mastodon is mostly free. Like, I mean, we're relying on a lot of free things.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure the internet would work if we weren't.
Not in its current form.
There's a lot of things like the good old sort of news, the online newspaper now, where a lot of that is still the end user expects free. Yeah. And so, and then you've got a paywall between you and then people come up in arms. But I'm now coming round to the idea, well, I've got, if I want decent content, I need to pay for it.
I don't think you can pay for everything.
You can't pay for everything, but you choose what you like. So I pay for the New York Times. I'm probably at some point going to pay for the Guardian as well. I think next time they ask me for money, I think, because it's good content. I read enough of it that, yeah, all right, I don't mind. You know, it's good. It's like the Medium platform that I read a lot of that. I pay the $5 subscription to get out for unlimited access, and there's some great content there. And again, I'm paying for access, and at least the creators get something a bit out of it now. Yeah. I suppose I'm on the other side of life now, where I can afford to throw $5 here, $10 there, without it being too much of a dent in my pocket. But the other side of the digital poverty sort of conversation is there needs to be an amount of stuff that is free for everyone to access, such as, I mean, if you haven't got you've got a tablet but you haven't got Office and things, you've got the Google tools that you can get for free, you know, those are things at least you can create stuff and you can do schoolwork and whatever else. So there is that kind of thing of trying to create of again, getting that happy balance where.
Yeah. So, and I said that that's the thing. I mean, I listen to, I don't know, probably 20, 30 different podcasts. If I was paying, let's say, $5 a month for all of them, that would be a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I would, like, in some cases, gladly do it. In some cases, I probably wouldn't. Yeah. So I'm relying, I mean, I'm very aware of that. I'm relying a lot on, let's say, free content in a sense. I mean, I get ads and that's fine.
But do we, I mean, the answer to that question is then, are we actually consuming a lot of crap? But we cheerfully use it because it's free.
I don't think so. My time is too valuable for that.
Would we then go, I don't need to listen to that because that's going to cost me $3. I don't need to listen to that. But I'll gladly pay 10 for that, you know. And you wonder a little bit with that model of economy, whether is that the way we should in the future go, you know, and it would at least mean that consumption becomes something a little bit different in a way in that kind of content. Or would the market stand it? I'm not sure it would, because people's new expectation of
we've already seen the market wouldn't stand.
Yeah.
We have seen different content distributors for podcasts try and do what you're doing. Basically create paywalls for the content. And with rare exception, that has not worked.
That doesn't work very well at all.
And it goes way deeper.
Spotify, right? Spotify's had a hell of a time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Meta or Facebook tried it. Nobody even knew they did.
Yeah, that was Facebook.
I think YouTube tried it a little bit. I think they gave up on it. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, there is some models that have somewhat worked. I mean, quite some podcasts do have like a Patreon or something and have some exclusive content or content that they, I don't know, that you get access first and then a month later others get it or stuff like that.
I guess it's like YouTube is as well with Patreon and things where you get early access to a video rather than seeing it from the...
The thing is, this goes way deeper than the content. This goes to the very core of the internet. If it wasn't, if it wasn't for open source, I don't think the internet as it is would exist because nobody could afford it.
There's
so much open source software running right now. I mean, our entire server is 100%, or both our servers are 100% open source software. 100%. Mm-hmm.
That is an interesting, I never thought, that's a really interesting point. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. Well, but you're still paying for the hardware, right? The hardware is not free.
Paying for the hardware, but I mean, from the operating system all the way up to like the live streaming software and everything, like every software bit of it is open source. And every software that we use is built on top of another 1,000 open source projects.
Yeah.
And that, as I said, that's something I really think about. Like,
When you think about the internet in its widest sense, the cluster of thousands and thousands and thousands of millions of computers that make up the internet, they're all running a free operating system. Without that, they wouldn't exist because you wouldn't run all the Windows. No one could afford all the licenses.
Mm-hmm.
And they crash all the time.
Yeah, I mean, there's Windows, there's also Red Hat and so on. There's a couple paid operating systems for like more commercial use. But I would say probably 98% of the internet at this point runs on free OS
of one description or another.
And all of that is built by volunteers or by advertiser being paid for it or by like people, like
companies donating money, their time,
donating time, donating money, all of it. So, but it's free. Like, honestly, I think about it at my company, my work, like how much we rely on open source software. The things we build for healthcare are 100%, well, almost 100% built on open source software. It's quite interesting if you think about that.
You know, as much as I'm loving this, I'm going to force us to move on because we're already 30 minutes into the show.
But holy crap, this is a good story.
Yeah, Patrice, killer story. I mean, we could just like wrap up and call it a show.
No. We should talk about Ian's story.
Yes. So, all right. So I'm going to concoct a transition. So Ian, earlier you said you're ready to pay for a subscription to The Guardian. Does your story have anything to do with that?
Yeah, there's good reporting on The Guardian always, but here I've picked one I call many that have been carrying this story this week. So it's an interesting way. I was researching this week because of the content I'm creating for work for cyber terrorism type of things, cyber attacks. And there's this interesting one that's here in the UK and probably wider still, the BAS in British Airways, Boots, the English equivalent of Walgreens, part of the same company group. And they're investigating the theft of personal details where a tool used by a payroll provider, so it's not anything to do with the layer of business that is any of those companies, not even the BBC. It's not that layer of business. It's the one below. They employ a company called Zealous, who deals with their payroll for them. And they use a tool called MoveIt, which is a company a lots of companies use as a secure way of sending transactional information between different places to get things like your wages paid and stuff like that. And there's a vulnerability in it. It was announced by the company a few days ago, and they're actually a small number of their customers, apparently it says, a small number, we don't know how many of that is, they've breached the SQL hack that they've breached and been able to... I've also included a link to the CVE. Mm-hmm. And so they've been able to gather some personal data. So that's kind of bad. And I mean, the sort of numbers I was... And this is kind of like tip of iceberg here, where, again, I said my research this week, $5 trillion within the EU alone gets lost each year due to cyber terrorism of one description or another. That's a crazy amount of money.
Yes. And this
is the annual cost. And that's just in the EU. We're not even looking at the US here.
Yeah, this specific incident underscores a big problem for so many corporations. Or doesn't have to be a corporation, companies in general, where they have done so much to lock down their own security, but they're reliant on other companies that have access in. And they
this is a third
can't
party.
Control everything that's downstream like that, try as they might. Yeah. And so you can have something where some open source tool that's been incorporated into this commercial package has some sort of flaw that someone figured out, and through that one thing that's buried in software that one company's using, who's contracting to another company and then providing a service for your business, that's the route that they use and that's to get all the way through into you, and everything on your end is locked down, but it's that sneaky little hole from the outside.
Right. Absolutely, that it's fascinating thing that you can have built your beautifully walled garden where you've kept everything nice and safe and you've allowed access in by your trusted vendor, and then actually they're not quite as up to the minute as you are with all your security. I mean, one of the things that comes from NIST, from the NIST regulations, is part of that is there's an onus on the company that sits at the top now to audit the layers below. To make sure your suppliers are compliant with the same regulations you are.
But
so incidents like this should be few and far between, rather than seeming like every week you see a different one online. I seem to talk about one of these every two or three weeks, sort of thing, of some different security breach of another. So
the thing is, I mean, there's kind of two things at play here. Just because it's an outside vendor, it doesn't mean they're inherently insecure. They might just be more interesting targets because they're servicing so many other companies, which makes it an interesting thing to get into. And the other thing is, I think a lot of companies have to grow up to the 2020s, because. Or even the 2010s, because I still see that so much, where people think basically just because you have a fence around your yard, nobody is going to break in, which is not true. And the equivalent being just because you have a firewall, nobody can get in, and everything inside can be secure. And I mean, the thing that I've learned that we have to think about these days is zero trust. Because we do not, like, anything within your company can be compromised.
Yeah, gone are the days when there was just a firewall on the outside and everything else was open inside. Almost every business.
And even that barely worked because, I mean, even then there was like constantly, you basically had to break through that somehow and like social engineering, whatever, and then you were in.
Yeah.
Even then, it was never a good idea, but it worked for a while.
Yeah,
but now it doesn't anymore. And that's what, I mean, that's what I keep telling people. I'm like, yeah, forget your firewall. The firewall is to keep the script kiddies and people like us out. If someone targets you, the firewall is basically non-existent.
Yeah.
Like, forget it.
I wonder if these companies had followed a zero trust model. If not, yeah, I mean, doubt it too. Because
BBC,
the thing is,
probably
once...
not.
I mean, once you get in, you know, the whole idea of zero trust is once you get in, it doesn't mean that you should be able to get everybody's name and bank account number.
Yeah,
because once you get in, you should be stopped by that. Yeah, because you're not.
You know, because there should be extremely limited access to all that, you know, all that information that should be segmented in terms of access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it still can happen. I mean, the thing is, nothing's perfect. There's always like a person working in front of a computer. And like, I mean, that's how most compromises happen. It's either someone inside or it's something like this where they compromise one system and go there to another and then use another hole somewhere else. And ultimately you get to the database where the interesting stuff is.
Yeah, it's usually some poor IT guy that has root access to everything that got fished.
That
it's always the wet squidgy bit in the end that's the problem.
Yeah, as I said, not in this case.
Not in this case. This time it isn't. This time it's a vulnerability in the code. They've discovered that.
Which happens all the time.
Patched it very quickly. So it's all a case of the users then need to get on top of locking it down. So
there's kind of two things that happen here. I mean, software that has been used for decades, even that software still has bugs in them, and that software still can be exploited. I mean, we found issues in OpenSSL that had existed for 10 years.
Right.
Like it's like the bug existed for 10 years. So it's like OpenSSL is even older than that. So, I mean, that's one thing. And then there is a tendency, and I see that even in a lot of companies, a tendency to reinvent things instead of using something that might have been hardened. So they start from scratch because they can do it better, and we can do everything better. And then they don't. Because again, there's users, there's developers and people doing things, and that doesn't always work out. So it's always a balance. And I mean, I live in this world. I deal with vulnerabilities all the time, and we get them and we have to patch them. And like, it's sometimes hard to keep up with. I'm going to be honest.
And we go
it's also hard to get software developers motivated to do nothing but fix holes, right, Patrice?
I mean
if that's all you did, that gets pretty boring.
Finding the place in the cycle, the production cycle, where you can go back to fix them.
Yeah, I mean the yes and no. I mean it is true. It is hard to sometimes get developers to do it, but most developers know how. I mean, let's put it this way: the more experienced know that, and pay attention to it. It's usually more a problem to get the business side or the people making decisions to
allocate
give you the time.
Give you the time
and the money to do it. but even those people are growing up and learning that, like, not investing and like not upgrading your dependencies for 5 years doesn't work anymore.
Oh my God. You say that and it just sends a shiver down my spine, but I know it's true.
It happens all the time. Like, you would be surprised how, I mean, I've seen things. Let's put it this way.
We all have. Yeah. We all have.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happens. It's the dependencies that don't get updated. It's the software that never gets updated. It's that old server that just stuck around because, I don't know, it was hard to get rid of. Someone was still using it, and it stuck around. And then, it gets compromised because, like, I don't know, the operating system ran out of security updates 5 years ago.
We don't touch it in case it breaks the application. We don't touch it because it's got an application. We don't, we don't know how to update. Yeah. And the company's dead, long dead. We still rely on it for line of business. You know, it's
exactly. That's the problem.
That's the scary stuff right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, updates important, which leads us to Tom's story, something new.
Let's talk about something new. My story is about SK Hynix, which is a memory chip supplier in Korea. Interesting note, Hynix, SK Hynix came out of the Hyundai family. If you have a Hyundai car, you should be buying Hynix.
It's more of that. Yeah, they're huge, aren't they? The whole Hyundai company is massive. They got fingers in so many pies.
They're like Samsung in that sense.
Yeah.
Right. True. Well, and the Japanese companies too. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Hynix is one of the four or five suppliers of memory, and there's always an intense competition between Hynix and Samsung and Micron and Toshiba. Hynix just announced mass production, which means volume production of 238-layer NAND. So I think we talked in here before about how NAND is evolving, that instead of each transistor getting smaller and smaller, they're just building NAND chips vertically. Mm-hmm. That's why they call 3D. So there's two interesting things here, I think. One is that they've gotten to 238 layers. As an old guy that's been in semiconductor for a long time, 238 layers is absolutely mind-blowing, that they can manufacture and get parts to yield that are 238 layers tall. That's a real trick. Yeah. From a processing chemical point of view, it's just amazing. Yeah. And the other thing,
as you said, get them to yield, because like every layer and every bit of complexity, like something can go wrong.
Right.
How many memory is it? What sort of depth of layer is each one of those 238? For those
it depends which layer, but it's on the order of probably 300 or 400 nanometers, so less than a micron. I mean, it depends on.
Yeah. I was kind of imagining it must be something like that. So that's incredible.
So they did 238 layers, and the 3D NAND started, about 10 years ago, and it was like 16 layers, and
which is still kind of crazy.
Yeah, even that's crazy. But now we're at 238, and so that means that the cost per bit's going to go down. If the yield is good, and it sounds like the yield is good enough for them to go to mass production. So that means for us as consumers, we should be able to get higher capacity SSDs for less money, not tomorrow, but over time. So this is a good thing.
Next year is MacBook Pros, probably.
Yeah, exactly. They're probably getting designed in now. Mm-hmm. And things are also getting faster. So they use PCI Gen 5. They use a term called mega transfers per second, and it's kind of better than thinking about megahertz in terms of how fast a thing is running, because some operations they can run in a half cycle, both when the clock is going up and down. So to sort of factor all that out of the equation, they talk about mega transfers. So it's doing 2400 mega transfers per second, but at the end of the day, what they're getting is 12 gigabytes per second of read writes.
That's pretty fast. I mean, that's like 3-4 times as fast as what we have right now.
Yeah, it seems like just yesterday we were talking about megabits per second. Was good. And then we're still
spinning like old school hard drives. We're still talking about megabits per second.
Yeah, sometimes when I'm doing backups, I watch the performance of my hard drives, and I compare the SSD to, I have a couple spinning drives too. And, it's very infrequent that you can max out the speed of an SSD, because you have your software on your computer doing stuff. But it's fun to watch during copies of big files.
It used to be when your computer started swapping and like putting stuff on your disk, I mean, the system would basically crawl to a stop because it was just so slow. And these days, I mean, there is still a difference, but it's like barely noticeable.
You hardly notice it. That's a good point. With all the improvements in storage, and especially going with solid state and faster solid state, you don't talk about, oh, my machine is swapping. You know, when I was young, using computers. I'm getting computers, a
spinning beach ball because my machine is swapping.
Yeah, the machine would start swapping. I'd go get a cup of coffee, yeah. You know.
Yeah, I mean, to the point that a lot of, and that's more on the Linux side, but a lot of Linux systems like don't have swaps. They don't need it. They have enough. They have enough RAM, and you don't like the RAM is cheap enough that you can like just do that, and then it's not worth it.
Remember, wasn't it on the old Macintoshes, the original Macs, that you could buy the?
You're thinking of RAM called? Doubler.
RAM doubler. Oh,
the RAM doubler. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a thing from the past.
I mean, and Apple is even doing some stuff with like compressed RAM and stuff like that these days. So.
I remember that.
And the funny thing about this story is that they call it, SK Hynix calls their version of 3D NAND, they call it 4D. Because 4D is one better than 3D.
Oops.
Well, of course.
Well, naturally.
Why not 23D? Let's play 4D chess.
Right. I was trying to think, what's the other dimension? You know, is it time? Is it, you know, temperature?
I can't wait for the quantum.
Chip. Quantum 4D.
I know Seagate have already got that one.
Mm-hmm.
But the 4D means that in a memory chip, you have the core memory, which is all the bits, and then you have circuitry around it to control it, to give you access for reading and writing. That's called a periphery. So instead of putting, typically it's called a periphery because it's around the core of the memory. It takes up space, you know. Mm-hmm. They actually put that control circuit underneath the memory. So they put it in the third dimension instead of 2D. Which also gives them some advantage on space and actually speed as well. So even though it's called 4D, there's no portal to the fourth dimension here or anything like that.
I want my money back.
Yeah. Did I put the second link in there just because it has some cool pictures? The SK Hynix press release has some pictures if you're interested about how the periphery is folded under the bit array.
Okay, I see the pictures. All right, that's cool. Man, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, how did we get to the point where we could conceive of this and then manufacture it, and not just like a one-off thing, but this is being commercially made? Holy crap.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And actually, if you look at the picture towards the bottom of that press release, and it has conventional and PUC.
Mm-hmm.
You can see in the vertical direction tall, thin things. That's actually the long pole in the tent.
Hmm.
And it's an etch step that creates this trench, which is only a few microns across. And it has to be relatively uniform all the way up and down this thing. And so that's the innovation that made 3D NAND possible, this trench. And it's basically filled with metal, so it's a wire. And it connects to all the rows, all the layers of the 3D, so you can get access to all the bits.
Wow.
And now today, once again, thank you, Tom. You've made me feel brighter than I did before. Yeah. You've now helped me feel smart today by understanding something about this stuff. That is very, very cool.
How long until they shift some part of that into another dimension?
Not too long.
Gosh, right. Dimensional RAM.
I'm sure they're working on the 5D RAM, yes. Uh-huh.
Yep. Where it has data and not simultaneously that you are planning to create but haven't yet.
And we'll always have created.
And we'll have always created. Right.
It's that dimension, they must be able to find it because it's clearly where Patrice's paint stripper went, where my screwdrivers disappear to every time I can't find them. They're in that other dimension. We just need to find that. And then the secret's unlocked. And then these guys can make the fastest RAM in the world because they can store it over there. But there's clearly unlimited space for a robot.
They can have like a massive structure behind it.
But in
our dimension, it's only
this big. I mean, in our dimension, there are books, magazines, TV remotes, all those kind of things that disappear into places you can't find them.
That's right. Dimension.
Socks.
The key to a new generation of NAND devices is finding that sock.
Yeah. And, absolutely. And it totally changes your data protection method. So instead of using data backup, you're using data for up because you're backing up the data you haven't even made yet.
Yeah.
That you didn't realize you've made yet.
And you know what the next thing is that we then invent? The infinite improbability drive.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, which is just basically what was it? Just a French bistro?
Right. Turn into a flower pot. Oh, mm-hmm. Not again.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Much like TSO Host is awesome. TSO Host is awesome because they are doing what they can do to help us do what we do. So you remember earlier in the show, we were talking about people want stuff for free, but stuff isn't free, and companies will step in and provide resources. That's what TSO Host is doing for us. The bandwidth to live stream shows and the hosting, the space that we need for the website, the online storage we need for hosting the show files, you can watch or listen wherever you want. These are resources that would otherwise be beyond our reach. And TSO Host stepped up and said, we've got your back. Don't worry. Here's all the live streaming bandwidth you need. Here's all the server space you need. Go have at it, which is great because without them, we wouldn't be able to do this. It's also great because what they do so well, it just works for us. And we don't have to worry about downtime for the website, not being able to live stream, show files disappearing. None of that is an issue because they are just so rock solid. So we are so happy TSO Host is here helping us out. Now, what you can do to show TSO Host that you're happy too is go out on social media and thank them for being here and supporting us. So just social media, boom, takes a minute, you're done, and everyone feels better. And we could all use a little bit extra happiness in the world, I think. So why not? And then let's say that you have come up with the best idea ever for a website and the domain name to go with it. Well, why not use TSO Host? Because they've already proven to you through all of this that they are rock solid. And they also make it super easy. So what you do is you go to TSO Host and then add the domain name you want to your cart, add the hosting package you want to your cart, and then add the discount code BTN20. And you'll get 20% off your order. So they're being super generous to everyone. It's just wonderful. And they're doing that just because you're part of the BTN family. So thank you, TSO Host, for being here and supporting us. Give them some online love and use them when you need hosting and domain names. And Patrice, we seem to have an active chat room today. Where can people find that?
Yeah, there is a really cool live chat with awesome people in them and a lot of like fun discussions and some secrets that were spilled, like what happens to every socks and how does that relate to the extra Tupperware lids that you usually find for containers you don't even own. So if you want to know how that happens and all of that, and if you want to participate in our live chat, you can join us right now, if you're listening to this live, at chat.britishtechnetwork.com. And you can do that every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time for the big show, and every Friday, 4 p.m. UK time for the Mac show. So there's like twice a week you get a chance to talk to us live, and I think that's pretty awesome. The show times change sometimes, so yeah, make sure to have a quick look at our website as a calendar and a show, like, and or our social media, same thing. If there's a change, we'll put it there, but usually we try to stay at our regular time. But let's say you are listening to this in the recorded form in one of the many usually also free or mostly free podcast players of choice, or on our free website, by the way. And you're very curious about all those secrets that were spilled in our chat, and you still you want to see that, or the cool things, the links, like everything we're posting, like all of that. There's still a way to get to that, and it's super easy, because all you have to do is you take your browser, you point it to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, and then there is a little calendar that pops up, and when you click on that calendar, you select a date, and that is the recording date, which is the 8th of June, 2023. And when you do that, you will see everything that was talked about in our chat. That easy.
That easy. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Patrice. That's almost as soothing as a Pangalactic Kirkle Blaster.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's from Melbourne, so I'm not sure I will get it here.
I'm sure there's been another one as well. There's been a few places making gins that are...
Oh, there's a lot of places making gins. But this...
Yeah, but no, we're calling it the Gap Bank. There was another... I saw someone else doing it. I was trying to find the original link, but I found that one. I thought, well, it looked fun, so throw that one in. But yes, Pangalactic Gap.
I just did a search, where to buy Pangalactic Cargo Blaster in Boulder. And it's amazing how many breweries and distilleries have something called Pangalactic Gargle Blaster. Like Shorts Brewing Company, Pangalactic Gargle Blaster is a Belgian style double IPA. Seems to me like it...
That's not what I'd expect it
should
to be.
Something different than an IPA. But I suppose if it's going to be an IPA, it better be a double or imperial. Anyhow.
I'm not getting any results in Austria.
Yeah.
I mean, there are plenty of cocktail mixtures, which is Tia Maria, vodka, cherry brandy, lime juice, 7-Up, dry cider. Is a combo to make one for yourself.
There are a lot of Pangalactic Gargle Blaster recipes out there.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yep. All right. Well, I'm waiting for someone to have the perfect recipe as their cool thing. And until then, Tom, tell us about yours.
Okay. Mine is from a company I think we all love, Anchor. It's a power bank. It's the 525 power bank. It's this guy right here. I just purchased it. You don't need to look at the photos at Amazon. I'll do it for you. So it's about the size of my iPhone.
Those are awesome.
Max, you know, it's a little bit heavier than the ones I've gotten before, but this one is 20,000 milliamp hour, and I can supply 20 watts. And with a good 20 watt plug-in charger, it'll charge up reasonably fast. If you have like a 10 watt charger, it'll take, you know, 7 or 8 hours or 10 hours to charge. But between having storms and power going out 4 or 5 times this winter, traveling in South Africa where they turn off the power 2 or 3 times a day for 2 or 3 hours at a time, I decided I needed to up my game. So I had some older Anchor ones from 4 or 5 years ago that were, I think, half the capacity of this one.
Mm-hmm.
But out of this one, you get, you know, 5, 6, 7 charges on an iPhone. On the old one, I only got, you know, 2 or 2.5. And it's a typical Anchor product, just solid, very solid. All the components are very nice. The cables that come with it are nice. Just a great product. So if you need a power bank, go for this one, Anchor.
Anchor does make good stuff.
They do. We've got 2 or 3 of them here that just go on, and they're all of their stuff in terms of the little the plug-in things for travel and whatever else. They're always excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good stuff.
Nice pick.
All right,
Patrice, tell us about yours.
So mine is the third book in like an ongoing series of me picking the Howie Silo series, basically. It's the third and I think the final book. I don't know, maybe there's one coming. I have no clue, but it sounds like this is the end. And yeah, it's the story continues, basically. I was like, now that I've listened to the third book, and I know the entire story, I am even more excited about the Apple TV Plus series Silo, because there's like, I don't know, 100 years worth of content in these three books that they could do. So it's really, really good story. It comes to a really interesting and really good conclusion. It has everything. It has a little bit of romance. It has like some drama. It has action. It has really everything. And you learn a lot about what's really going on and like how this all came to be and what is really happening in the Silo series. So yeah, I'm not going to spoil anything else. You have to read it or listen to it. I highly recommend it. It's probably my favorite book series of this year. So it's really cool. Well written. The audiobook is awesome. All of that.
You've made me much happier that I bought this series on mm-hmm. Kindle and then completely forgot that I had it. Like I've had this series for at least, I think, a year now
mm-hmm.
and totally yeah. forgot that I had it. So,
and I think the book was released, so Dust, I think, was released 10 years ago. So it's been around for a while. The audiobook was just released, I think, like a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So this is fresh, but the book, like written and everything, that has been...
Wow, you're right. First published August 2013, 10 years.
Yeah. Almost 10 years, yeah. So yeah, it took a while, but it is really, really good. And I'm very happy that I listened to it like straight through. It was so good.
Are you guys up to date on the TV show?
Mm-hmm.
Silo.
What day yes. does it come out on?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Fridays. So yeah, Fridays.
Okay, so then yeah. I think I am current.
Yeah, you haven't seen anything yet. Like we're just getting started with the story.
It sure feels that way.
Yeah.
Based on where we are in the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty clear to me that unless they were to do massive cutting and editing, there's no way they could wrap up the story this season.
No. I mean, as I said, it's three like 15, 16 hour books. And there is huge gaps in between where it just gets like they jump in time and all of that, so
mm-hmm.
there is a lot that like a good writer can fill in extra bits and interesting stories that we haven't seen yet, which you know is the difference between a book and a TV show. Like you can fill in character and like build out the characters more and so on. Mm-hmm. So it's a different medium, and as I said, I'm now even more excited about the series than I was before.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm. For me, sometimes the TV show moves a little bit too slow, mm-hmm. the storyline. But it's well produced anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, I should mention there is some significant differences in the TV show. Like the basic points are the same, but they change some things around, and some things are happening in the show now that were in later books and so on. So. Or they like changed some things that were like told differently. Simply, I mean, it's a 10-year book, so some like right. some things is probably also good to adapt. Like I think in the book they talk about that the generators are running on basically on oil.
Oh really?
Yeah, and we saw steam. So.
Oh right. Yeah,
stuff like that. So there's some stuff that they for sure like let's say modernized.
Cool. All right. I really need to start reading that series.
Mm-hmm. You do.
Yeah, I've got, on your recommendation, I got the first one, or the first mm-hmm. Book in the series in my on mm-hmm. my Kindle now, waiting in the queue to patiently to get read.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that means it's my turn now.
It is.
Your turn, Jeff.
Yeah.
My turn. Okay, here's my pick. It's not nearly as exciting as what all of you brought, but
very timely.
Very timely. If you're, especially if you're in Northeast United States, this is the Weinix 5300-2 air purifier. I have one of these and I've had it for a couple of years. This thing is awesome. It's quiet. and works really well. And it's easy to maintain. The front panel just pops right off. And then you have access to the filter elements. I could elaborate on it more, but it's a really good air purifier at a reasonable price, and it's not loud, and it works well.
That's nice. So, can you other than like the obvious thing happening on the East Coast right now with like wildfires, and I mean Tom has had quite some of that, and Jeff, you have had too. Mm-hmm. What are other reasons people would want to buy this?
That's a really good question.
Allergies. I own air purifiers before all the wildfires for allergies.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, if you take antihistamines every day, it just kind of screws up your body, or steroids or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, completely.
But I found that if it was a particularly bad day, if I went into a room and closed all the doors and windows and cranked one of these up, it would give me relief. It was really good for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's the reason I first got into having air purifiers, and it does make a big difference for allergies. Some places that people live, where, like some rental places, you don't have total control over the cleaning, especially long term.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get stuff that's like just blowing through the vents that can trigger your allergies or just be like an irritant while you're breathing. Mm-hmm. And use one of these and help clear that air.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the other reason. Like, I mean, even if you don't have allergies, if you're living in a place that has like a bigger city, for example, or whatever, that has a lot of pollution, even if you don't have allergies, that's not good for you. Like, that's definitely long-term, not a good thing. Mm-hmm. So maybe something you could invest in. And they're not super expensive. Like $140. That's
right. Yeah, this one's
$138. I think it's worth the money.
Yeah.
And you can tell that we're having the bad smoke from the Canada wildfires in the Northeast U.S. right now. Because when I brought this link up before the show, this is available. Now it's showing temporarily out of stock.
Oh, so basically someone bought the last few.
Probably.
Which I'm not surprised.
The good news is for about $100 more, instead of getting the Winx, you can get the MacX. It's basically the same thing, but it's built, you know, a lot better, and their return policy is a little bit better.
Okay.
That's a joke. That's a joke.
Yeah. The
bad joke.
Not joke, Honeywell makes some really good air purifiers.
I have a Honeywell.
Yeah, I have a Honeywell on the other side of this wall that you can't see because there's a camera between me and it and the wall. Anyhow, that one actually has a Bluetooth control through an app on your phone. So you can, like the Winx, you can set it to use its little air sensor and decide when to turn on and off.
Mm-hmm.
The Honeywell, since it has the app, you can have it set so that when you're in Bluetooth range, it's on, and when you're not, it's off.
Wow.
That's cool. That's really cool.
So anyhow, this, the Winx, I really like.
There's one for $200 that's still available.
I think we should also say that this is an area that you have to be careful. Don't buy crap ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There are a lot of crap ones out there that don't work very well.
Don't do anything, basically.
Yeah. And there's some that, there's one in specific, and I cannot remember the name, that was advertising on a lot of shows a couple years ago.
Yeah, I remember which one was that.
And I can't remember which group did a study on a bunch of the different air purifiers, and that was one of them. And
wasn't that the wire cutter even?
It was probably the wire cutter. Yeah. And they said that this one, the really popular one that's being advertised everywhere, it literally doesn't work.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, they tried it and with like some scientists, and they were like, yeah, it's not doing anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also, I think they debunked a couple others, like the Dyson. I remember that it was basically not doing anything.
Man, nothing more.
Yeah, it was basically a fan. I mean, it was like supposed to be an air purifier, and it was mostly a fan.
Yeah, you just want to get a good HEPA filter and blow, you know, move a lot of air.
Yeah. Yep. And change out the filters.
Change the filters.
Otherwise, yeah. That's no use.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you live in Arizona, for example, you have to do that like twice a year or something because of the dust. So yes. that's a reason to have that, because I mean, the dust in Arizona actually has some nasty stuff in them.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I have to replace the filters on. I have a different one in each room of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So I have three. And I have to replace filters on those a couple times a year because of the dust. And when we have a big forest fire situation, wildfire, we have lots of smoke, you can actually see the discoloration mm-hmm. in the filters, mm-hmm. even when I've got all the windows closed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's not, I mean, you're not living in a perfectly sealed environment.
Right. And I'm living in a place that was built in 1903, and there's no
seals a little drafty
around the windows. Like yeah. strong winds, windows uh-huh. are closed, there's dust on the windowsills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyhow, the Winix, the Magix, I really like that joke. Yeah. And that one actually is in white. You can click on the button. Is that one in yeah. stock?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. That's the 200 one. And it's the Johnny Ive white, right? The
Ivy. That's the Johnny Ive white. Well, that one also has the more stylish grill front where it's holes. It's, so it looks perforated instead of having yeah. slats like the one that
yeah,
I have.
Yeah, it's a Johnny Ive version.
Like, it's a perfectly totally a Johnny drilled Ive holes. Version.
And it's yeah. extremely
cheesed right.
Yes, it's chamfered edges all the way around.
Chamfered edge.
Ivory. Yes, exactly.
Yes. All right. So we've made it to the end of the show, and surprisingly, yeah. we actually didn't run that much over an hour.
Despite yeah. me talking way too much about everything.
It was a good story.
You're providing valuable content so that I didn't have to speak, and thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Patrice, where can people find you?
Oh, I'm here every week on the Big Show on Thursdays and also on the Mac Show on Fridays. Remember, tomorrow we're revealing the surprising results of our keynote poker. So if you're into that, if you want to play, you can use, well, no, you can't because an event was already announced. So you can't play, but you can see like how bad we were and how, like, did we get anything right or not? Do that tomorrow. You can find out everything about me, like all the social media links, the podcast, the projects, literally everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com. And if you want to, like if you're on Mastodon or you want to join Mastodon, maybe you're an instance, like a bigger one, you're like, it was fine for the beginning, but I want to move. Moving is super easy. I can tell you, you don't lose anything. Your content is still there. And all the settings move over. So the content doesn't, but the settings move over. I have my own instance, techhangout.social. And if you go there and sign up or drop me a line, I'll give you an invite link. You know, it's exclusive. Not everybody can join it, but you can because you know me. So then head over to techhangout.social.
Awesome. Let's see. I had to actually look at my screen again. Okay, in my defense, I had to get up super early today so that I could moderate a webinar. And then from that, I went into meetings online and now here. And there's still a sip left in my second cup of tea.
Jeff, we didn't notice the entire show until the end, so that's pretty good.
Yeah. That's true. Nice. Yep. Anyhow, so I had to look at faces on the screen again. And now I remember who else here besides me. And Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me, as always, every Thursday here on The Big Show. If I'm not here, you'll find me on LinkedIn as Ian Grant and on Facebook as Ian Grant somewhere. There's a few of us, but you might find me. And that's usually the best places. That's about the only ones I tend to do these days.
Awesome. And Tom, look, I actually remembered you're here. And I'm not saying that in like a negative way, but like my attention span, because I'm tired, has gone down to the point apparently where as Ian was talking, it was completely plausible that I had forgotten that anyone else is here.
Or why you are here.
Or why I am here.
Who are you? Which planet are
you? Want me here? What's my name?
Right? Which universe? Isn't this a musical?
Yes, it is.
You can find me on Mastodon. I'm Tom F at sfba.social. And I do have a recommendation for the Mac show tomorrow. Given the interchange on Slack, I think Patrice and Ewan should have a proper debate about the future of the Vision. What's it called? Vision Pro?
Vision Pro.
It's yeah. point counterpoint. I think it would be interesting.
Yeah. You mean pointless.
Yeah.
It might be pointless.
I'm with it. I'm with the point. I'm with the point suggestion.
That's awesome. All right. So I had to look again. I'm like, oh my God, Jeff is here.
Oh my God, Jeff. Who are you?
Yeah. So
who are you? And if you are, how many? No details, just the universe.
Right? Oh, right. Oh, man. Okay. I clearly need another Pangalactic Gargle Blaster.
You do.
Absolutely.
Yes. But, you know, I mean, honestly, who doesn't? Okay. So, social media. I'm Jay Gamet, active on Mastodon and Instagram. And, but the same username, I think, everywhere. And then shows. All right, Tuesdays, Chuck Joyner keeps letting me on Mac Voices Live. Then Thursdays here, sitting in for Ewan on The Big Show. Then Thursday evenings, Dave Ginsberg lets me join in Touch with iOS. Then back here on Fridays for The Mac Show. this week, In Touch with iOS is going to be live on Friday after the Mac show. And that's because Patrice is going to be on again.
Yes. And I'm going to talk way too much about what happened on Monday.
I am looking forward to it. Let's see. Okay. So there's all that. Oh, Brian Chaffin and I do the Context Machine. And then on Monday of this week, I also was on Mac Geek Gab with Dave Hamilton and Pilot Pete. And, I think there's other shows that I've done along the way this week. It's been a blur. Anyhow, I'm easy to find. Thank you, all of you, for being here. You are all awesome. And you've been wonderfully patient with me today as as I vacillated between not hardly being able to remember where I am and creating Broadway musicals for you. You were all absolutely awesome. Everyone that's watching or listening live, participating in the chat, you are all fantastic and wonderful people. Thank you for being here with us today. Everyone that watches or listens to the recordings later, thank you for being part of the BTN family. Love all of you, whether you're here live or listening, watching later. Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, feel better soon. And thanks for making sure we have people for shows. Let's see, TSO hosts, thank you for being here and supporting us. Give them some online love, everyone. And let's see, next Thursday, join us again for The Big Show. Tune in tomorrow. Patrice was telling you that we will have the results from our keynote poker for Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference on the Mac show. So that will be fun. And my guess right now, here's my prediction for tomorrow. I have negative points. And Patrice, I know you know the answer, but no confirmation or denial. Just let that one sit, and we'll all find out tomorrow. Just how
you know what you know. What's really fun to do is to listen to the keynote poker Mac show after the keynote.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's what I did. It's really funny.
It yeah, because you're funny. Like, oh, no, that was so wrong.
All right. It was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyhow, be sure and tune in for that tomorrow. And like I said, join us next week again for the big show. And I think I hit everything. So with that, everyone, thanks again for being here and have an awesome weekend.
No hitting.
Right.